Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
A lot of stories to get into. The Commissioner's Roundtable with our very own Mike Greenberg last night on these very airwaves. You saw it on ESPN television. We'll get heavy into that, the Colin Kaepernick aspect from Roger Goodell. And I don't even know what to say anymore, Chris, about Major League Baseball. Before we even get there, because I don't want to start out on that with you. I want to say good morning. It's so nice to be here with you. How are you, Chris Canty?
I'm doing good, Dave. How are you doing this morning?
I'm fine. Although I will tell you. Well, you know what? I can't hide my feelings. You know this. I'm an emotional guy, and I can't hide my feelings. I'm so angry with Major League Baseball. I have no patience. I'm not even placing blame on either side specifically, although I know where I believe the bulk of the blame would go to. But how are we here? Chris, how are we June 16th? NBA has decided what they're going to do. Hockey's decided what they're going to do. And baseball, who had such an opportunity to grab the bull by the horns, it infuriates me to no end, Chris.
It does, Dave. I feel the same way that you do. And the front man for the owners, Rob Manfred, has just made things worse by waffling back and forth with his confidence level on whether or not we're actually going to have baseball this summer. I mean, a week ago, you're talking about how he's 100% confident that we're going to have a season. And then last night, he's on with Greeny, who did a phenomenal job,
That was a lot of moving parts for him, too. He was very good.
Yeah, he did an outstanding job. But then he's on with Greeny, and he says, yeah, I have some serious doubts about whether or not we're going to have a season. I am not confident that we're going to have baseball. And I just don't understand what happened over the course of the last week where Rob Manfred says we're not going to have we have the potential to not have baseball when he, as the commissioner, has the ability to unilaterally impose a schedule. That was based on their late March agreement. So I don't get why the commissioner of baseball is now so hesitant to utilize that power in order to allow the fans and the players to get back to the sport that they all love.
Well, we'll hear from Manfred in a moment, and Rick's going to join us in a minute as well. He's having some technical issues, so once that gets squared away, he'll, of course, be on the show. But
are the Chipmunks involved with the technical issues?
Well, they were at Bettman's house last night.
I saw that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They're everywhere, Dave.
They're taking over. They're absolutely taking over. How cool was it last night that Bettman had a hockey goal right behind him in the shot?
That was dope, and I thought he did a good job last night.
He did.
I thought he did a good job. I thought everybody represented themselves well last night, with the exception of Rob Manfred.
I agree.
That's where we're at. Everybody did a good job on that special. I mean, even Roger Goodell answering the questions about Colin Kaepernick even before Greeny prompted him to. Like, I thought that was the right thing to do. And I know we'll get into that conversation later. I'm just talking about the level of optimism that we saw from the representatives of all the other sports around the country, with the exception of Major League Baseball.
I agree. And it's sad because they had the opportunity. And Mike Tannenbaum is going to join us at 11. We'll do all the things we normally do. But they had the opportunity, Chris, to really be the first sport back. And did you see the golf numbers from this past weekend? The golf numbers were up more than 50%, the same tournament from last year to this year. You're on a platform where you're the only thing sports related. Baseball had that opportunity. Their numbers would have been great. Their advertising would have been terrific. There wouldn't have been fans in the stands, but I still think they would have made up for it in other ways. And they're so short-sighted. It's so mind-boggling to me that they continue to do this.
They continue to do this, Dave, and I know they look at it as a fight with the players. And Tony Clark and the MLBPA, they're dug in after what happened in 2016. I understand what they're doing and how the 2021 CBA negotiations are the backdrop to all of this. But when you look at baseball specifically, the fact that the owners were the ones that decided to make this public and that it's gotten so ugly, I don't know how they shouldn't be the ones to absorb the lion's share of the blame and the criticism of all the fallout from this ugly back and forth. Like, to me, this is the owners deciding to make this ugly. It didn't have to come to this kind of it didn't have to get to this place.
Yeah, I agree with you. But can we get into a room and negotiate, for God's sakes? Do we have to have one side, putting out statements and then other sides putting out statements? Put on your masks, get in a room, the most important people, and lock the door until you can figure out some semblance of a deal. And let's play baseball.
Well, I feel like the owners, you know, decided that this was going to be their negotiating tactic. This was going to be their strategy once they came to that late March agreement. And they were going to say, you know what? Well, if it's definitive that we're not going to be able to have fans in stands, then we reserve the right to renegotiate. All the while knowing that they wanted to revisit the negotiations and the finances of baseball because they wanted to be opportunists in a pandemic. They wanted to look for every avenue that they could to reduce player costs and to give them a degree of certainty in uncertain economic times. And to me, that was unfair. I mean, just the premise of it, to think that the players would be in better position to shoulder the burden of a pandemic than the owners is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the players have a finite period of time that they can capitalize on their athletic ability and they can monetize that. The owners can own these teams forever. And the valuation of these baseball teams continues to go up, up, and up. So the baseball owners have more resources to be able to manage a pandemic than the players. And to decide that we were going to allow them to have pro rata salaries and then to go back on that because you're not going to have fans in stands, a conclusion that you probably knew you were going to come to anyway, I just don't understand where the good faith is from the owner side.
Well, look what the chipmunk has dragged in. Good morning, Ricky Pietro. How are you?
Good morning, David. Good morning, Chris. I'm doing all right. My head feels like it's going to explode trying to update this this unit with Rodney and Dinahan. I mean, craziness. It actually makes me want to be a hacker, to be honest.
You can't even get your unit working. How can you hack other people's?
No, I can get it working. I mean, now the question remains, can I get it updated? But I mean, but it opened up my eyes to, like, you know how I joke around putting the Band-Aid on the camera?
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense. I mean, Rodney had me downloading all this different, software and everything else where he can actually see what I'm typing. Like, he was hacked into my computer. It was crazy.
What, so he's watching your computer the way you can do whatever you're doing on it?
Yeah, I have a Mac.
Rodney's our head IT guy, by the way. Terrific guy.
So usually what he would do by me, letting him in, Dinahan goes, well, it's not hacking if you let him in. Okay, whatever. So he's in, and then he could, in theory, take control of my computer. So he could just all of a sudden, he had full access to my computer. Like, he could type in websites that he wants and everything else.
Oh, my goodness. So if he didn't like you, he could really cause trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly right.
This day and age, the IT guys are the most powerful guys in any company.
Yeah, you got to befriend them.
If you don't have an IT guy
on the job, you meet the most important person at the company, right? The GM, the president, the CEO, whoever it is, and then the IT guy. You befriend the IT guy.
Yes.
Rodney's the guy you want on your side.
Yeah, you got to
ask Andrew Gunlin.
And Rodney's a terrific guy, so it's not all that difficult with him.
We have to trust him because he's like, I got the spyware and everything else coming up. He goes, no, just allow. I'm like, okay, I'm going to trust you. I'm just going to allow all this.
We'll see how the unit works during the show today. So,
sorry you had trouble with your unit this morning, Rick.
Oh, boy, here we go. All right, I'm not even going to ask you for a timing issue because I don't want you to give away the game show that sweeps the country. What time did you go to bed last night? But did you watch the show in its entirety last night? Or
did you
watch it? You stayed up. Wow. Wow.
Whoa, hold time out. I'm not giving anything away. I mean, I watched the entire show.
Show in its entirety last night.
I can't answer that question because that gives it away. I mean, then all of a sudden now you narrowed down my time of shutdown.
There's nothing wrong with giving us some context clues. What's wrong with that?
Right.
This is my problem is because me and Dave now and Chris, we've spent so much time together that it's almost like I thought it earlier this morning I would throw some real hidden clues in throughout the show that if you guys are paying attention to what I was saying, you'd have a better idea what time I went to sleep. Mm-hmm. And Dave, just 10:05, he already comes up with it.
Oh, yeah. He's fishing for him already.
Well, listen, I won yesterday. I'm looking to win again today. I want to put a wrap on week number two. I got big plans here for this game.
And I appreciate that. This is why I love this show, though, because there's nothing we can do that the three of us don't want to win.
This isn't
just for fun.
That's true.
You want to win everything.
That is correct. All right, so speaking of winning, we talked about it before you hopped on this morning. We thought Goodell did actually very well. Bettman did well with the chipmunk in his garden, mind you.
Jacked up chipmunk.
Yeah, Manfred, I don't know. I was kind of underwhelmed with what he had to say last night and certainly concerned about what he had to say as well.
Well, because he's in a tough spot. I mean, they're playing this game of chicken, and we said this the entire time. It's okay. You have, you'll have this leverage up until a certain point. And finally, the union smartened up and Tony Clark just said, hey, we're ready to play. Tell us when. Which just highlights the fact that this has been their plan the entire time, was just eat away at the calendar when they got to a certain amount of days,
until
games.
Until we can come up with, 50 games is what we can lock into. Let's do that.
Here's the best thing I saw last night, and this is outside of what Trevor Bauer tweeted, which was great. I mean, that gave you some insight. So this is Joel Wolf. He's an agent on Major League Baseball, Owners Crying Poverty. He goes, the Marlins played without fans for 15 years, yet still managed to give a player, Giancarlo Stanton, the biggest contract in sports history, and then sold the team for $1 billion profit with five competing buyers. You tell me who's losing money.
Yeah, they're not losing money.
Yeah, if you got five competing buyers, there's got to be some profitability there.
People aren't
throwing around $1 billion for no reason.
And listen, I understand that you want, I mean, it's supposed to be a partnership. And when you have a salary cap, it is a partnership. So in the NHL with escrow and with the NBA, like, you'll share in the losses with the owners. That's how that system works. But the more I thought about this last night, I understand that premise. But because we're dealing with a pandemic, and for some reason, you know, we've gotten away from the health and safety of the players, I mean, you're asking the players to take on 100% of the health risk. This is a different kind of circumstance. I can understand usually, like, if the product stinks, right, and people, you know, have no interest in consuming it, then, okay, your product stinks. Players are the product, so you should take part in some of the losses. But this is a pandemic, man. You're losing money because people can't go to games because of the pandemic, and now you want to put your players in a situation where you're exposing them to the potential to get sick.
Right.
So they should get, I mean, in theory, they should get 100% prorated salaries.
They shouldn't get less. You're asking them to take on more risk and to jeopardize their short and long-term health. It's not that we're saying that they should get hazard pay, like they should get more, but they absolutely shouldn't get less. And that's kind of what we were talking about with Blake Snell when he went on social media. We don't like the way that he delivered his message, but his point still remains valid in that it's wrong to ask players to take on an inordinate amount of risk and you are going to pay them less than their prorated salaries. That part about it doesn't make any sense. And even without the health risk, even if we're not factoring that into consideration, the fact that we're in a pandemic and we know that other people are going to be affected more, it's just one of those situations, if you're one of the haves, that you would consider giving a little more than the have-nots. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, the baseball players are poor, but I'm saying in comparison to where the owners are at, the players don't have nearly the resources that the owners do. You know, I drew the comparison last week to, you know, landlords and tenants in New York City and landlords having to forgive the rents of the tenants because they are assumed to be in a position to be able to shoulder more of the economic burden of a pandemic than the tenants are, than the renters are. So if we're saying that that's okay in that circumstance, why should it not be okay for Major League Baseball? And you're talking about owners that have businesses with their clubs that are worth over $1 billion. How does that make sense?
That doesn't.
Okay.
I just want to make sure
that I'm not crazy, because that's how I see it in my mind. But yeah,
I think that's what the players see.
Calling up our show saying that, oh, the players are being greedy, the players are being greedy. Well, if the players are being greedy, what the hell are the owners? The players aren't negotiating against themselves.
They're not negotiating at all.
Well, and there lies the biggest problem. Is that rather than look at this situation as, you know, an isolated negotiation, both sides are using it as
leverage for the next CBA.
Exactly right.
Which is pathetic.
It's pathetic, but that's the reality of this business.
But I'm telling you, the game of baseball will suffer for this. If they do not play this year, and everyone seems to have this idea, or the owners and players, you know, well, then we'll start in April and all be back to normal. I'm telling you that the game will be damaged forever if they do not pick up and play, and it's over money. If it's over health situation, I think it's different. But if it's over finances, I think this game is irreparably damaged. I really believe that.
So you don't think there will be a recovery like we saw in baseball in the late 90s?
Listen, I can never say never, but I think it's going to be bad. I think people will be fed up. I think people will be angered about this. I think it'll be really bad for quite a long time. Listen, 94 was, I mean, it was nothing. It was over money, and it was at a time where the country was, whatever, we're fine. You just go about your everyday business. You have such an opportunity right now. I think that people will take this and remember this for a long time. I really, really do. You don't think so, Rick?
No, I mean, I think people will remember this. And I think, I mean, listen, baseball was trending in the wrong direction before this whole pandemic and the shutdown and everything else. I mean, they were looking for innovative ways to, you know, to try to engage a younger fan base. I mean, we understand that. Baseball was not in a good spot.
Sure.
And this isn't going to help it. Do I think the diehard baseball fans like the three of us will come back and watch? I do, but I think
I
on
will.
Top of that, but forget just, I mean, we're not sitting here talking over the last couple of months about TV revenues. I mean, you just saw the, you know, the deal that Major League Baseball looks
the
like they're going to sign for $1 billion.
Oh.
And that's not even for the World Series, right? So, no, but we're talking about the 40% they're losing in ticket revenue. So, you're going to turn people off because they don't like how this whole thing played out. And then on top of it, people aren't going to have, you know, disposable income just lying around to come to games anyway. So even if they wanted to, even if they're like, they're not so turned off that they don't want to go, can they afford to go?
And if they can afford to do one thing, is that going to be the thing that they decide they want to do with the way baseball's handling this right now? I don't
exactly
think so.
Right.
I don't think
right.
so. I don't.
So no one wins.
No one wins. And it angers me. Like, I'm furious about it. Let's take a listen. Let's get some phone calls on this as well. 800-919-3776. I mean, let's throw it out. I mean, are you going to just jump right back on board? If they don't play this year and then next April there's baseball and you're allowed to go to games, are you just, you know what? No harm, no foul? Or are you actually going to, is there going to be a lingering circumstance with you that you say, maybe I'm not going to go to some of these games moving forward for the way that they've acted here? 800-919-3776. Now, the commissioner, Rob Manfred, last week, a week ago, said, 100% guaranteed there'll be baseball. And now, last night with Greeny, who did a great job, and we mentioned that earlier, he's not so sure anymore that it's 100%.
I do learn as I go along. Given how long my 100% prediction lasted, I'm not going to handicap it again, but it's something less than 100, that's for sure.
I mean, it's awful. So now we're less than 100.
Well, but he backed himself into this corner, though. But he, yeah. I mean, he backed himself with the help of, I mean, Tony Clark finally, you know, smartened up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that now, I mean, you saw the latest, is they want the players to sign an agreement that they're not going to sue them for $1 billion.
Which is ridiculous, by the way. We're going to add another stipulation on this. So now that the union has taken this position and they're asking the commissioner to set the schedule, a power that he has, he's not going to exercise it without the players waiving their right to file a grievance if they feel like the negotiations haven't been in good faith. How is that something that the players should agree to?
Well, because if he sets the schedule now, and like Trevor Bauer alluded to, there's still too much time.
And that was a brilliant tweet, by the way. That was brilliant by Trevor Bauer. That series
of
tweets.
He's a smart guy. He really is. I don't know if you guys ever saw that piece on I guess it was, 60 Minutes Sports on him? He's a really thoughtful, intelligent guy who's not afraid to speak his mind, even if other people don't agree with him.
Sometimes he can go a bridge too far, but he was right on the money with that series of tweets last night, Dave. He was.
Yeah, no, he was terrific.
And,
what
the players did, essentially, with this strategy that Tony Clark is employing, they called the owner's bluff. Okay, you don't want to give us our full prorated salaries. Let's go ahead and set the schedule and get to the season. Knowing full well that the owners will only want to play between 50 and 60 games because from an economic feasibility standpoint, that's the part that makes the most sense where they can mitigate losses. But that's not necessarily negotiating in good faith to have the longest possible season.
Right. And then they can drag it along until they get to, July or August 1. You play August, September, and then magically you play 50, 52, something like that games, 48 games. And then you can pay them their prorated salary and you move along. It's bad. So Rob Manfred answered the question last night. What are the owners exactly interested in right now? What are they interested in here?
The clubs are interested in one thing. The clubs are interested in finding a way back on the field, and it remains their strong preference to get back on the field with an agreement or at least the cooperation of the players.
Rob, what are your concerns for the optics of this circumstance playing out as publicly as they are during the time in this country where all the other things, the confluence of events involving the pandemic and protests in the streets and everything else, of this playing out as publicly as it is?
It's just a disaster for our game. Absolutely no question about it. It shouldn't be happening. And it's important that we find a way to get past it and get the game back on the field for the benefit of our fans.
Well, unless you get the game back on the field, this is the commissioner that says you have a disaster going on right now, Chris. And that's what you have. The court of public opinion, this is nothing short of a disaster for the game of baseball.
Yeah, the owners are taking an L right now, and that's based on how Rob Manfred has represented this thing the last couple of days. To me, the only way they can walk this back and put the pressure back on the MLB players in the court of public opinion would be if Rob Manfred said, we want to set a 70-game schedule, full prorated salaries, and they have to waive the right to file a grievance. Then you're starting to have a conversation, because now you're getting closer to having something that's representative of a season. You're inching closer to having half the schedule in play. And based on where we're at in the calendar, that's something that can be done. They can implement that. Both sides can make that work. But to me, that's the only way that Rob Manfred and the owners can put the pressure back on the players. That's the only thing that can happen right now. Anything other than that, and it feels like the owners would have been disingenuous this entire time in terms of their negotiations with the union.
But they need the – here's the thing, though. I mean, you also have to take into account, if you're Rob Manfred in the owners, who he says 100% want to play, okay, I mean, I'll believe that when I see it. But if you force-feed the players whatever it ends up being, you know, 50 games, that still means that you're only going to have – the 10-team playoff. You're not going to have the excitement of the 16-team playoff.
Right, which this year would have been so good.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. I mean, if you're gonna introduce the sprint to the finish in one of the fears of the teams like the Yankees or the Dodgers, you know, what happens, God forbid, if we get off to a slow start and you have the best teams in the league, or at least one of the best teams in the league doesn't make the playoffs? That's not good.
No.
So you'd like to have, so instead of 10, give us 16, but we can't get 16 unless we come to an agreement with the players. So then, I mean, there needs to be, in order for this to work, there has to be some kind of an agreement made. I don't see how force feeding the players 50 games is going to work with everything that has to go into it.
You guys were the professional athletes. So let's just say, for argument's sake, players are livid. They don't want to be there. Can't they almost make a mockery of this?
Yes.
My Mike Trout, you know what? My groin, it went. It's just, you know, Mookie Betts plays four games, you know, gets service time for the season, and my ankle is killing me, and I don't see, they can make a mockery of this, can't they?
They could make a mockery of it, Dave, but you gotta realize this is the game that these players know and love. And there's a respect for the game factor, even though they might not respect the tactics that the owners have had.
Mm-hmm.
There is still a respect for the game. Like, you still go out there on the diamond and you want to respect your craft, you want to respect your sport, and you want to represent it to the best of your abilities. That's separate and apart from your feelings on the owners. Plenty of professional athletes have gone out there and played really hard and given it their all for owners that they don't necessarily like, but it's about your teammates, and it's about respecting the game and showing your love for the game by trying to play it at the highest level. So I don't think guys would go out there and dog it, even if the commissioner unilaterally imposed a season that they weren't necessarily on board with. So I look at it from the standpoint of them trying to figure out a path forward. But to me, the onus is on the owners much more than it is on the players right now.
Oh, so unbelievable that we're sitting
here. It's crazy,
Dave.
This is madness.
And
Rob Manfred goes out there and talks about how this is a disaster for the sport. Well, you are the face of the sport. You're the commissioner. So if it's a disaster, you had to have played some role in making it as such.
Yeah. He's been.
I mean, you have to take some responsibility for this. I don't know how you couldn't. This can't just be all on the players and them having a ridiculous point of view, because they don't.
But negotiate, for God's sake. Let's go to some calls. Let's go to Mike in Valley Stream. Lead us up. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, whenever I call in, I just want to thank Chris Canty, because my childhood was just infinitely better because of him. So I want to thank you for that, and Michael Bulley for knocking out Romo. But anyways, I just wanted to say that, you know, the blame's got to go to Rob Manfred. The guy's got to get it together. I mean, it's not like he's an Adam Silver type commissioner where he has a track record of success and he's done amazing in his first few years. The guy's proven nothing in the last few years. He's just changing a few rules around, trying to tarnish the game. And look what he's doing. He's going to lose the game on us. And it's not due to the coronavirus, it's due to finances, which is unacceptable. I do think the only thing that I don't like about Tony Clark is that it's different than the NBA where you have a Chris Paul as president. He's a past player. So in my opinion, obviously he has something to lose, but not as much as an active player who has a depreciation on his, you know, career. He has 10, 15 years. And I do think that they should try to work it out somehow. I don't really know the answers, but, I mean, they got to get it together. And, Dave, I just wanted to say I appreciate you. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks. Very nice. A lot of positive commentary there from Mike. But you know, he says got to get it together. It's easy to say, Rick. I mean, how do you get it together? They're not even talking, the two sides.
Well, I think the last time they said they've had a face-to-face talk was, what, a week from Sunday?
Yeah.
And then we're back and forth.
You should be round the clock talking about this right now.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, if you're Tony Clark in the Players Association, I mean, there hasn't been a negotiation. It's been a couple different proposals that are all, I mean, right, just dressed up differently.
Yeah, you're not negotiating anything. You're giving a proposal, then it's being rebutted, and then you go back and forth, and nothing gets accomplished, and we run out of time, and we run out of amount of games we can see.
Yeah, I go back to that. I mean, that the initial conversations they had in March with that March 26th agreement, I mean, I understand both sides, but when you read the ambiguity is, you can't, it's unforgivable. I mean, these are high-priced lawyers. You make a deal, it should be, okay, clear as day, this is the deal. But when you read the actual,
yes,
it's not, though. I mean, I can see both sides.
So you want to kneecap the lawyers?
Yeah, because, I mean, this is what they're paid to do. Like, this, we shouldn't be at this point. It should have been clarified. This is what the players want. Okay, done. Even with no fans. But when you read it, I mean, it does insinuate that, you know, if you're playing games and there's no fans in seats, then there's going to have to be another negotiation.
But here's my thing. The owners already knew that we were at a state where that was probably going to be the case. That's the part that I don't get. I mean, if you can have the wherewithal, the foresight to put that provision in the contract, then wouldn't you anticipate that you're probably not going to be able to have fans in stands? So why wouldn't you negotiate based on that premise? And if you have fans in stand, well, then that just creates an opportunity for more revenue for everybody.
If you have two paths, right? If you have fans in stands, then it's A. And if you don't, then I'm sorry, but it has to be B. Because we knew at the end of March that you weren't going to get fans back in stands.
Exactly, Dave.
People wouldn't leave their house. People were panicked in late March. They thought they were going to get 40,000 people packed into a baseball stadium.
Well, I think there was hope. I mean, I think there was hope. Why else would they be? I mean, it's not the safest plan to have teams play in their home ballparks. So they must have thought at some point that they would be able to open up at least, you know, I don't know what the percentage would be. But they get, I mean, maybe even if it was just season ticket holders, they'd have some fans in the seats.
Right, but how about a provision for that in this negotiation back in March? That if we're not allowed to have fans in seats,
But I think their provision was, I mean, if you read the actual, I mean, the actual back and forth, it does sound like that was kind of agreed to, that there would be another conversation. And it didn't have to be pay cut. It could be full prorated, but they would have to discuss how many games made the most sense.
But what Dave and I are saying, Rick, is that why wouldn't you spell out exactly what that would be if you weren't able to have fans in stands? Why wouldn't you nail down the economics under those circumstances back in March rather than waiting to exercise a provision to renegotiate because it was official, quote unquote, that you would no longer be able to have fans based on the ordinances by these local municipalities? That's the part that doesn't make sense to me. Like, you could have done that then. Okay, here's the number that we're talking about for players if we have fans in stands, and here's the number that we're going to have if we don't have fans in stands. And let's agree to that now in March rather than waiting until May and June to negotiate that.
Because I'm not going to, you know, try to stand up for either side.
Okay.
But, I mean, that would be a tough conversation to have when you really don't know. I mean, at that point in March, there were still more questions than you had answers. Like, who knows? I mean, you could say fans in seats, but what does that mean? It's not going to be full ballparks. I mean, what percentage of your seats can be filled? Well, who's going to be willing to come to the games? You don't know any of that.
Well, you don't know any of that, but I think you operate any business, you always try to protect against the downside of anything that you're doing. And so I think you operate under a worst case scenario and under the circumstances with a pandemic, I think that's worst case scenario. You can't have any fans in ballparks. So just operate with zero fans and that any gate related revenue not being available to you. What would that number have to look like? What would the season have to look like under those circumstances? I'm just saying that you could have had both provisions already spelled out in the March agreement. You didn't have to wait to revisit the conversation of salary with the players in May and June in the interest of time. We could have streamlined this, but I don't think the owners had any interest in doing that because I think the owners from the get were trying to be opportunists and use the pandemic as an opportunity to try to stick it to the players.
Well, I don't think the players would have liked at the time, like if it was spelled out, I don't think the players would have necessarily liked the amount of games the owners felt comfortable playing. Like if the owners in March said, hey, listen, I don't care what the date is. It only makes sense for us to play 60 games financially with no fans in seats. I don't think that would have sat well with the players either.
It might not have sat well with the players either, Rick, but you would have at least had more time to try to work it out. Now you're running out of days on the calendar. That's my whole point. Like because of where we're at, we're talking about the middle of June, you're not going to have an opportunity to set a schedule that's going to appease the players if you're not able to come to some agreement over the next couple of weeks. I guess if you would have started back in March, and maybe that doesn't mean you have an agreement in late March, but if you continue to negotiate from that point, I just feel like we would have been in a better place today than having the perception that you have an agreement and then that you're changing said agreement because you're not having any fans. I just think that was going to be a mess, and neither side was going to like the position that they were going to be put in when they had to revisit the conversation about salary.
I just think ultimately you were going to end up in the same spot. Now, I mean, who knows how, you know, in the court of public opinion, how different it would have been if you had, you know, a better understanding, a better, you know, working relationship. But I just think, I mean, when you start looking at, you know, where we've come from when they made what they thought was this initial deal, I don't know if fans would have been happy and, more importantly, if players would have been happy knowing how many games the owners wanted to play. Like, I mean, if the reality is with no fans in seats, the owners only want to play 50 games, that there was still going to be a fight. I mean, the players want to play as many games as possible.
No, you're right. There's still going to be a fight, but let's have that fight in March. Let's not have that fight in May and June.
But Chris, how do you have that fight in March if you still don't know whether or not you're going to have fans in the seats and how many fans you're going to have in the seats?
Because I don't think you have to have an agreement that says it's only going to be this way, and if it's not this way, then we have to completely, you know, rip up whatever we had in place and go another direction. You can have an agreement that stipulates that if we're no longer allowed to have fans in stands because of what local governments are saying about the pandemic in large gatherings, then this is what the numbers are going to have to be.
Or then there's a renegotiation even. We don't even have to define it. Then it gets opened back up because it's different than what we're expecting.
Completely ripped
right
up.
Now.
Yeah, exactly. The agreement that we had in place is null and void. Okay, fine. Cool.
But that's where we're at. But that's where we're at. You guys are pretending like that's not where we're at. That's exactly why there was so much ambiguity in that initial agreement. So this could happen. So that once they finally got more answers, realized they can't have fans in seats, is that they could reopen this thing up and say, hey, that whole full prorated thing, yeah, we're not interested. If you want to play more games, you're going to have to be, you know, 80% of your fully prorated. If you want fully prorated, then you can play, you know, whatever it ends up being, 50 or 60 games.
Today on ESPN Daily, the XFL was primed to make spring football work, but it shut down amid the pandemic. Did that have to happen? More on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. We'll get into the NFL portion of last night with Mike Tenenbaum at 11 o'clock. We, of course, have Andy from Merrick with his wonderful, wonderful trivia questions at about 10:53 this morning. I don't want to confuse anybody, especially you, Chris, you, Rick. Andy from Merrick, but a different Andy from Merrick is with us now. Andy, welcome aboard. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good morning to you all, and thanks for being around and being part of my day.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. I am the other Andy from Merrick, just to...
Yes. How does it feel? How does it feel to know that in a town of Merrick, that you are the other, the second Andy from...
It's not right. I'm only the other Andy from Merrick on your program.
So if you were to walk the streets of Merrick, you'd be known as Andy from Merrick.
That is correct.
Okay.
So I just wanted to say, as a massive baseball fan and a longtime Yankee fan and a guy that goes to, you know, opening day year after year and goes to, you know, 10 or 15 games, not a season ticket holder per se, but somebody who likes to go and, like, sit in the stadium and, you know, enjoy the 3.5 hours of leisure time watching other people play baseball, I think that MLB has probably lost me, right? They're gonna maybe play a 50-game like nonsense season this year, and then over the break they're gonna fight about money again, and then play like come back next year and be like, "Hey, we're back," and then they're gonna fight about money again after next year. So why am I gonna go and give them my hard-earned money?
Can they win you back, Andy? Or are you done?
Well, how are they gonna win me back? They already. They could have won me back if they said, "Hey, we're going to be first to be back. We're going to start baseball on Independence Day, right? America's game starting on America's birthday. And here we go. We're first to the, you know, first out of the gate other than, say, golf," right? And they could have had all of America's attention. But now, instead, the only attention they're garnering is because they're fighting with each other over the same things they always fight about. Who's got, you know, who gets more of the $1 trillion that they're making every year.
It's a bad look.
It's unseemly and it's ridiculous. And especially now, this year, they're going to start playing what, when there's playoff hockey on? I mean, Rick, you know, there's nothing more exciting than playoff hockey. So why would I tune out like a playoff hockey game to watch the Yankees battle the Orioles for, you know, for a piece of the 50-game season? I won't. The end. There's no baseball this year in my eyes, and there probably won't be anyway because they're still going to be fighting about money a month from now.
But you don't think that there's any way, and it's easy to on June 16th to talk tough about baseball. But if you really love it, like I do, and I talk tough, but I mean some of the things I say. But you think if they come back 55 game schedule and then figure out a deal that they start next season on time, that you really will hold to it and just you're done with baseball?
Well, you know, I've been through this before with the 94 strike and, you know, all the other labor, the labor disagreements, we'll call them, over the, you know, 49 years I've been on the earth. And every time I've come back because, God, I love the game, right? But this time, you know, it's a little bit bigger than just a labor disagreement. This is they have an opportunity to actually bring some joy back into this joyless year. And all they've done is spit at each other across the table, like have a spitting contest and say, "Oh, why, you know, how come my face is wet?" It's ridiculous.
Well, and it's Andy, we appreciate the phone call. And by the way, you are second to no other Andy from Merrick. He's a good caller, and I think he's right with a lot of things that he says. But I still
think
if he's the guy,
if he's the guy and he's walking around Merrick, he'd just be Andy. I mean, he's in his hometown. It would be Andy from Merrick. It'd just be Andy.
Just because they know him, he's Andy.
If he's that big of a deal, he's walking around in Merrick. That's Andy.
That's Andy. So what would the other Andy be?
He's our Andy from Merrick.
He's going to have to use a last name. The other Andy's going to have to use a last name when he's walking around Merrick.
Yeah, or an initial. Like he's Andy P or whatever it is.
Right. Or maybe he could just be A.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, though. Your final point on this, and again, no one likes it, but yeah, I mean, the more we go back and forth, the more I kind of understand why we're at this point, is if this entire time, and I think, you know, what you heard from Manfred last night was the recognition that they kind of screwed up. They played this game of chicken thinking that the players would flinch, and they haven't flinched. So now they're in a tough spot. Andy, not Andy from Merrick, that's just the Andy, said, you know, they had the chance to be back first. Well, I mean, we all want to believe that, but if this entire time the owners realized that we only want to play a certain amount of games, the only thing they can do is pretend to go back and forth and just eat away at the calendar.
Sure, but they had the chance to be back first. Did you see what the golf numbers were this past weekend? They were up more than 50% from last year.
Yeah, but that's fine. But you're missing the point,
Rick.
But you're missing the point. No, yeah, you are missing the point. The owners are not interested in that. The owners are interested in losing a certain amount or having to pay out a certain amount of money.
Right. They want to play 50
That's
games.
Incredibly short-sighted, though. If you're owning a business and you're trying to grow the game, that's incredibly short-sighted to have that strategy in the middle of a pandemic. And I guess the part that people have a hard time understanding is this whole thing is about money. Had it been about the health and safety and the precautions, the protocols that are going to be implemented in order to keep the players as safe as possible, I think folks would understand that. But the fact that you've made this thing about money from the jump, it's just ugly, Rick. That's the part of it that nobody can understand. And last night, Rob Manfred insinuated that they haven't come to terms with the protocols that are going to be implemented. But Tony Clark put out a statement immediately after he did that spot on the SportsCenter special saying that they're close to agreeing on the terms from the health and safety aspect of things. So I guess the fact is that they can try to wrap it up any way they want, but both sides are arguing about money. And in a time where over 30 million Americans are unemployed, folks don't understand why millionaires are arguing with billionaires about the dollars and cents of the matter when they just want to watch their game.
I think they could have framed it any way they wanted to. I just think the further along we got in this process, even if it was just about, I mean, for the time being, just about the health and safety, I think people are smart enough to realize, you know, once we got to a certain point that it was about money.
But Rick,
and the reason why they weren't playing was because of money.
The health and safety thing is a real concern.
Because no, listen,
100,000 Americans are dead. And so when you start talking about the players and their families, underlying health issues, and the risk of transmission of the virus, I think that's a legitimate concern. Like, people can understand that, especially where the country is at right now, where the states that we thought were safe at the outset of this thing are the states that are dealing with an uptick in COVID cases. I mean, I get
what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense. And that's what the message should have been the entire time, starting with what Tony Clark said. But I think where we're at now, you come to the realization that this was never meant to be a negotiation. This was always going to end up, the owners wanted to play a certain amount of games. So if a month ago, the players have said, hey, you know what? We came to an agreement, health and safety, we're all set, let's play. The owners would have still found a way to drag their feet, which would now made it all about money, because they don't want to play 114 games or 89 games unless the player is going to take less than fully prorated, which they're not going to do.
I'm not arguing that point, but what we're talking about is what's in the best long-term interest of the sport and how this has gotten ugly in the fact that we don't have baseball. I was simply making the point that if we didn't have baseball because they were trying to work out the protocols that they would put in place to keep everybody safe, I think people would be able to digest, okay, we don't have baseball because they're still trying to figure out this issue. Whereas now we don't have baseball because these two sides have been arguing about money for the better part of the last 2 months.
I get what you're saying, and I agree. But I think at a certain point, the players, and they just smartened up with what Tony Clark said, would have realized what was going on and would have said, okay, we've read, you know, all the safety protocol. We agree with it. Ball is in your court. And the owners, what were they going to do at that point? I mean, now all of a sudden the pressure would be on them, and they're like, hey, we don't want to play this many games. So right now it's going to obviously become
a point. Now you've got to drag it out anyway.
Okay,
I think
so
ultimately
we've
been in the same spot.
So you're saying this was never a negotiation. This was never meant to be a negotiation. This is just a stall tactic by the owners.
Yes.
Okay, so this is on the owners to fix then, right? This is not a player issue. This should be the owners who are ultimately the gatekeepers of baseball. This should be a problem that they fix. As ugly as this thing has gotten, this is on them to fix. You shouldn't be asking the players to help you clean up the mess.
No, you're exactly right. And I think the fact that Rob Manfred with Greeny last night said, you know, he's not 100% sure that there's going to be a season, and then all of a sudden you see what was sent to the union, that they need to sign an agreement that they're not going to sue the league. I think the league realizes, I mean, that we may lose. If they take us to court, we're probably going to lose, and that's going to be $1 billion. And we don't, that's not what we want. Because otherwise, you wouldn't care. If you thought,
taking the court. Exactly. But see, that's the part that bothers me, Rick, because they've made this thing about economic feasibility. But if it wasn't economically feasible, then you wouldn't be worried about losing in a court of law, losing in front of an arbitrator. That wouldn't be a concern. Okay, we're going to implement a 50-game season and go ahead and drag us to court because we can show you with the books in front of an arbitrator that it didn't make sense for us financially. But the fact that they don't want that, the fact that they're putting in this stipulation that the players should waive their right to file a grievance, leads me to believe that the owners are just trying to use the pandemic to stick it to the players even more. And that's not right. And I don't understand why more baseball fans can't see it for what it is.
I think they'll start. I think the tides could be turning a little bit.
I think people are more pro-player than owner. I don't think it's 90-10, but I think it's 60-40 right now, pro-player.
Well, because their message...
Hey, did you feel that way a month ago?
No.
Okay.
No, because Tony Clark finally... I mean, he finally smartened up. They called the bluff. They finally smartened up. Their message is exactly the same message you're hearing from fans. We're ready. Let's play. You tell us where.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what every fan is saying.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me... if you asked any fan right now... Hey, you know, for free, you get to go play for the Mets. Your first, okay, where and when? Tell me when. I'll show up.
That's right.
What the players are doing.
July 4th, July 20th, August 3rd, whatever. Just tell me when, where I can watch it, and I will be there. And what time. That's it.
Now you're speaking the fan language.
That's right.
We can relate to that. Tell us where and when.
Everyone can relate to that. And that's kind of what their new mantra is now. You see all the players tweeting out, where and when, where and when. All right, let's bring him in. A man that takes a backseat to nobody. He, in my mind, he will always be Andy from Merrick, and that is, ironically enough, Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Rick and Chris. How are you today?
We're doing okay. We're hanging in there.
Well, June 16th of 2015, the Golden State Warriors knocked out the Cleveland Cavaliers to win the 69th NBA championship.
Now, hang on. Are you mid-question already?
No. Huh. And that is my lead-in to the fact that in honor of that 69th anniversary, we're going NBA today.
Oh.
All right.
Okay. We in the radio. Yay. We're called a setup, David.
Oh, yay. I see. Thank you for teaching. I appreciate it, Andy.
Chris, NBA question. There are two cities that have a current streak of 52 years without an NBA championship, 1969 to the present. Can you name either one of them?
Oh, of course, the New York Knicks. I mean, New York, right?
No, the Knicks have won in 1973.
Okay, so
1969.
Okay, let's see here.
Dave has to know this.
1969.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Western Conference, Andy?
One is in the West and one is in the East.
Mm-hmm. I think I have the Western
1969.
One.
Okay.
Give me a second.
Let me think about it. Let me try to think
that.
This thing through here.
I'm going to give CeCe a little help here.
Give me a hint. Give me a hint, Andy. Give me another hint. Give me one more hint.
In the last dance on ESPN, the documentary, this team was quite focused on in terms of a finals appearance,
but
did not win.
Is it a very warm weather city?
Okay, was this the Phoenix Suns?
That would be correct.
There you go.
Okay.
Dave, you want to give a shot at the other one?
I don't know that I know it. So it can't be like an Orlando Magic because they haven't been around long enough, right?
That's correct. This is a franchise that's been around a long time, has won a championship. But not in their current city.
They have won a championship and not in their current city.
Well,
it's an Eastern Conference team.
Santiago, you think it's easy?
I have some thoughts here.
Really? See, I would have thought the Kings, but you said it's another Eastern Conference team.
Would it?
Santi, why don't you dive in here if you have some answers?
Oh, no, you know what? I'm wrong because you said Eastern Conference, so I take it back.
Okay, you walk that back.
How about the Hawks?
The Hawks is correct.
Nice,
Hawks.
David.
Interesting. Okay.
1969, they moved into Atlanta. Of course, they won as the St. Louis Hawks. Rick,
okay.
Patrick Ewing is the Knicks' all-time games leader with 1,039 in a New York Knicks uniform. Can you tell me who's number two?
Who two?
Whenever you're ready, I'm here for you.
I'm gonna go with Dave. Obviously knows it. We can. Dave, what do you think? Give me a hint, Dave.
All right.
Super oh, I know who this cool. is. I know who this is. I know
Super
who this is.
Cool.
Well, is Walt?
His clothes, Ricky.
Oh, Walt.
Clyde Frazier.
Yeah, Walt Clyde Frazier.
Swishing and dishing. Nicely done. All right, Dave, this is not an easy question.
Oh, terrific.
Which team drafted Bill Russell with the second pick of the 1956 NBA draft?
All right, so now most would think drafted by the Celtics.
Which is obviously not correct.
Is it the Hawks?
It is the St. Louis Hawks. Wow, very good.
Oh, there we go. All right.
I'll give you another little piece of, as Rick might say, a tasty nugget. The pick after Russell was Jim Paxson, Sr. Jim Paxson's father went number 3 or 4 in that draft.
That's nice. Nice little nugget. Andy from Merrick, the one and only. We appreciate it.
Stay healthy, guys.
All right, there you have it. Good stuff from Andy from Merrick. All right, want to remind you, of course, you can listen to us. You can listen to us anywhere. Here's how you do it. It's easy. Click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.